1-1 pitch. Swing and a drive. Deep to right field. Way up there. Way out of here. Goodbye, baseball.
Strikeout for the King tonight and make it 23 consecutive scoreless innings for Felix.
Strike three called on the outside corner, and there it is.
It's time for the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast.
Kyle Seager! That just happened! Thank you very much!
Now, here's your host, Gary Hill.
And it is time once again for the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast. Happy year long once again. Gary Hill back with you. A tough one we have to talk about last night as the Mariners go down in game two of the three-game set to the Angels before finally returning home. It ended up being a tough, tough night, and we'll detail why coming up in just a couple of minutes. Brandon Liebhaber, the voice of the Jackson Generals, is going to join us. He was on hand for Danny Holson's first start. He'll give us an update on DJ Peterson, Gabby Guerrero, a lot to get to with that conversation coming up. You'll enjoy that. Also, some changes for the M's. New shortstop, Chris Taylor, is up. We'll hear from him. And also some very interesting comments from Andy Van Slyke. And he's going to talk about Brad Miller. How can he do in the outfield? So we'll hear from him. It's pretty fascinating stuff. So that's coming up as well. So we have a ton to get to. But let's start with the game last night. James Paxton on the hill for the Mariners, Garrett Richards on the mound for the Angels. So you knew it was going to be a tough matchup with the ace of the Angels staff on the hill. Of course, Felix and the M's winning game one of the series. So the M's looking for a series win, and at this point, have a chance to have a winning road trip. But it's always tough when you face the ace of the opponent. So really what you're asking for in this case of James Paxton is to keep your team around and try and steal it late. That's the goal against an ace like Garrett Richards. He was so outstanding last year, got a late start to this season, obviously, with the injury, but he's pitched pretty well on his way back. Things didn't start the way James Paxton would have wanted. Gave up a two-run home run in the first inning to Albert Pujols, but then Paxton really settled down, and he looked really, really good.
The 3-2 pitch, and it's a breaking ball for strike three called. He got him looking on a slow curve at 82 miles an hour. He strikes out Mike Trout. His third strikeout of the ball game, and there's two outs for the Angels here at the bottom of the fifth, and what a pitch by Paxton.
Yeah, and as it turned out, those were the only two runs in the first inning that Paxton would give up. Seven innings, just four hits, a couple of runs, three walks, and four strikeouts, 91 pitches, really settled down and pitched well. Danced out of a couple of issues along the way, but an outing you would take each and every time from James Paxton.
Paxton turns, tosses home, swing and a miss. He cuts right through a curveball with a lot of tilt to it. That was a tight and vicious curve from Paxton. Calhoun down on strikes, and for lefty James Paxton, that is his fourth strikeout tonight, and he retires the Angels in order here in the seventh.
And the stuff was there for Paxton. His four-seamer was sitting just a touch below 95 miles per hour. He maxed out at 97.5 miles per hour. The fastball was humming. He had a good curveball as well, some nice tilt to it, and he had his good stuff, which is great to see. And it seems like, you know, after not pitching a lot in spring training, it seems like he is starting to work himself into a groove. Now, this was a tough one because you lose on a night where he pitches well. But moving forward, if this is the James Paxton we're going to see, that is a great sign for the Mariners. And Paxton talked about it after the game as well.
When did that happen, and kind of what set that off for you?
You know, I really felt like I fell into a rhythm in the fourth inning there. I started letting go of the ball a little better, and it was coming out pretty good.
Back-to-back pretty good starts, pretty deep in. You feel like you're getting where you want to be here?
Yeah, I feel like I'm getting really close. You know, I was falling behind in some counts, making some pitches. Those guys were making great plays in the field. And, you know, Z called a great game. And I just have to keep on working towards what I think I can do.
So seven innings, just a couple of runs for Paxton. Solid, solid. But the Mariners still trailed by one heading into the eighth inning. But then they get the sticks cooking. Richards at this point is out of the game. He pitched really well, which isn't a huge surprise. Richards ends up going seven innings, gives up five hits, one earned run, walked a couple, and fanned five. Mariners get to work offensively in the eighth inning. Kyle Seager coming through with a big hit.
the next offer. Swing and a ground ball, base hit into right field. Here comes Cano on to score from third, and Kyle Seager has tied up this game at 2-2.
And it worked down there. Mike Zunino, who already had driven in a run early in the ball game, comes through with a big ground rule double.
The pitch, swing and a fly ball deep down the right field line, slicing into the corner on the warning track, bounces over the wall into the crowd, a fair ball, and it's a ground rule double. Mike Zunino with a base hit the other way, bounces it into the crowd in the right field corner. That will score Seager from second, and the Mariners have the lead 3-2 here in the top of the eighth inning.
So a two-hit ball game for Mike Zunino. Great to see. So the Mariners tack on one more two. Dustin Ackley, a sac fly. So the M's at this point, you know, they've put a three spot on the board in the eighth inning. They've taken a 4-2 lead. But one of the differences we've seen this year already is the bullpen has not been invincible as they were last season. Danny Farquhar gives up two runs in the eighth inning. And in the bottom of the ninth inning, walk-off style, the Angels, their starting catcher, Iannetta, of course, has struggled so much this year. So making his major league debut, it was Carlos Perez, and he comes through in a big, big way in the bottom of the ninth inning.
The pitch, swing, and a well-hit ball deep to left field. Ackley going back to the wall, reaches up, goodbye baseball. Carlos Perez with a walk-off home run in his major league debut tonight wins it for the Angels, a final score of 5-4. Carlos Perez just called up from AAA Salt Lake City, a leadoff home run to left field here in the bottom of the ninth inning. He's getting mobbed at home plate.
There it was, and that was the ball game, a heartbreaker for the M's. A game they were up by two late. The bullpen can't hold it. And walk-off style for the Angels. Leon, after the game, he did not mince words on how he felt about the way he pitched.
Yeah, it's unacceptable. Especially after this team, you know, is fighting, battling. We're trying to win some games. And you know, you come in and give them that. It's unacceptable by me. You know, I'll be the one who wears this one and you know, I wouldn't blame these guys if they all looked at me like, hey, pick up, because that's what needs to happen.
And then I thought Mike Zunino summed things up pretty well after the ball game.
Yeah, I mean, that's the biggest thing. Is, I mean, sometimes I feel like we've been taking a step forward and then taking two back. And, I mean, we really got to get this thing rolling. But, I mean, I thought Paxton did a great job. I mean, he gave up two in the first and then really shut the door the rest of the game. And once you pull the lead out like that, I mean, usually, I mean, it was lights out last year. And I mean, this year we're just making a couple mistakes. I mean, walks will always come back and kill you. And then, I mean, we just made one mistake, and Perez put a good swing on a ball.
So there it is. The M's fall to the Angels in Game 2 of the series. The look for the series win tonight, a couple lefties doing battle. Roenis Elias will take the hill, 0-1, 3.86 ERA. And going for the Angels, the veteran C.J. Wilson, 1-2, 2.73. So the M's will look for the series win, and they'll try and get even on this road trip before returning home for a nice long homestand. We'll preview that in the podcast tomorrow. Now, one of the big recent changes for the Mariners, Chris Taylor has come up. He now has two games under his belt, starting at shortstop for the M's. Shannon Dreyer, a chance to talk with the Mariners shortstop.
New arrival here. I think we're all excited to see Chris Taylor, because I think the last time we saw you was tough. I mean, you're having a very good spring training, and it came to an end abruptly. You had that wrist injury. What kind of mindset did you go into after that?
You know, I tried to forget about it. Obviously, it was a tough one. There's never good timing for an injury, but, you know, I'd probably rather it happen then than in the middle of the season. And, you know, I just tried to move forward and you know, just focus on what I could control, and that was getting better and getting back out on the field as soon as I could.
You know, we followed you since you got back to the field. Obviously, you had a little bit of a rehab start, and then they assigned you to Tacoma, and it looked like you picked up right where you left off in spring training. The numbers were there. The hitting was there. How were you able to keep that going?
Yeah, it wasn't immediate. It was probably a week or 2 weeks in where I started to feel back to normal and feel like myself again, and the game finally started to slow down. But, you know, it's going to take a little adjustment period just seeing live pitching and getting comfortable up there again. But, yeah, you know, these last couple weeks I felt really good and kind of picked up where I left off in spring training, getting back to that approach and some of the things I was working on in spring with my hitting coaches. I got back to doing that, and, you know, it worked out for me.
You were working on some different things, if I recall right, in spring. You know, we saw one thing last year, and you said you kind of wanted to add to that. You wanted to hit for a little bit more power.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I didn't want to, you know, throw that in the bag just because I got injured. You know, I wanted to build on that. And, you know, just because there was a four-week setback there, I didn't want to completely throw it away. So I've tried to slowly work that into my routine and pregame, and once I get in the game, I just play. But it's definitely gone into my preparation. So.
Okay, so how did you find out you were coming back?
They pulled me from the game yesterday. I think it might have been the fifth or sixth inning, and Pat pulled me after my third at-bat, and he told me, he said, I mean, it's nothing official, but he congratulated me, so that's kind of how I figured it out.
And then if I read some tweets right, you went over and you coached first base?
Yeah. Yeah, I think we were short a couple guys, so, you know, I had no problem going out there. It's probably the happiest I've ever been coaching first.
Did you tell anybody to run just for the heck of it?
I was willing to do just about anything at that point.
Right. Fantastic. You walk into the clubhouse, you see all the familiar faces. What's that like?
Yeah, it was a different experience than last year. Last year was more eye-opening, didn't know what to expect. This year is more of, you know, almost I have a different comfort level with all the guys. So, you know, definitely more of a welcoming feeling.
How was the team in Tacoma doing? I mean, we could see them, you know, by the numbers and whatnot. As far as, you know, kind of that group coming together, we saw a lot of them in spring. What do you see down there right now?
Yeah, we had our ups and downs like any team. But, you know, the camaraderie and everything, I thought all that was really good. You know, I thought we were playing well at the time when I left. We had been on a little bit of a winning streak, and it seemed like we were building, definitely getting better every game, every series.
Lastly, to get in here, to get into the clubhouse, to see your name in the lineup, what was that like?
You know, it's exciting. Really, that's the one word I would use to describe today. You know, I'm just excited to get back out there on the field with the team and hopefully help us win some games.
Without a doubt, it's good to see you. Chris, thank you.
Thank you.
And connected to that, Brad Miller. Lloyd McClendon said yesterday that they're going to move Miller around a little bit, some outfield, some first base, some shortstop as well. Andy Van Slyke had some very interesting things to say about Brad Miller and the possibilities of him in the outfield. Here it is.
It's kind of big news to people back in Seattle that the last couple of days we've seen Brad Miller taking some early work out in the outfield, and today Lloyd McClendon says he could play out there. You'll probably see him at first, see him in the outfield, see him at short some. And I kind of think back to last year at the end of the year when Lloyd said that you would watch Brad in the outfield a little bit and had some good reports on him. You liked what you saw. What do you see in him as a possible kind of raw outfielder?
You know, it's so early to tell. You don't know how guys are going to react in the game, but I think Brad Miller is athletic enough. He's fast enough. His arm is strong enough. He takes good angles to the ball and during batting practice that he could actually be an outstanding outfielder. And he's got an outfielder's body when you think about it. His body, the way he runs and, he's big and he's strong. He's built more like an outfielder than he is an infielder, especially a middle infielder. So, yeah, I mean, can he do it? I think he can. And only time will tell whether how well he can play and how good he can be if he gets a chance on an everyday basis to be an outfielder in the big leagues.
So what do you do? What's step one in just kind of trying to teach him?
Well, I think the most important thing for me is to watch him first, to see what he does very well and leave him alone, let him do that naturally. And if he doesn't do something correctly, to work on that. I think the worst thing we can do to any athlete is take away his natural instincts and his natural ability to play whatever game he's playing. If he does it at a high level, obviously he can play at a high level here, or else he wouldn't be here. I'm going to let him do what he does naturally. If something doesn't work out, we'll correct it. But he's got ability. We'll find out what he does well and what he doesn't do well, and we'll make those corrections.
The outfield throw is different than the infield throw. We know he's got an arm, and sometimes that was a little bit of the problem, I would imagine. how do you start working that in?
I think this is actually going to be a blessing that he doesn't know yet, because in the outfield, you never really want to lob the ball, or you never really want to aim the ball. You want to let it go with all the velocity that you can and all your might. And sometimes you have to have a different feel as a middle infielder or a third baseman when you make a throw. In the outfield, it's all out. I mean, you're letting it all hang out, because every throw that you make potentially is a saving run play. So I think when he learns to throw the baseball as an outfielder, he's going to have a lot of fun doing it.
And that fun's going to be important. If you talk to him now, you know he's a shortstop at heart. This is a little bit of a blow for him. How do you help along those lines?
Well, that's time. You know, it's sort of like losing your dog or losing a friend or, you know, a broken relationship. This is, you know, he's been relationally, emotionally, and physically a shortstop, and to have that relationship broken in his mind and his heart is a hard thing for anybody. So it's going to take time. But over time, they say time heals all wounds. We'll find out whether that's true or not.
Smart words right there. Hey, we've seen you down in the cages. We know you've got added duties this year in hitting. What is it that you want to bring to the hitters?
I think maybe simplicity. You know, I was fortunate enough to play 13 years up here. And, I'm a mechanical guy. I believe in good mechanics, don't get me wrong. But I think most of the time when it comes down to, if you have the ability to hit the baseball, you got here because you could hit a fastball. And for the majority of the time, when big league hitters go bad, who are good hitters, it's because they don't hit the fastball. And so I try to remind them to get on the fastball. And the better we are on the fastball, the more runs we score.
Andy, I'm sorry. We've only got time for the basics, but that's all good stuff. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you.
So clearly a situation we'll be watching closely. And speaking of situations we'll be watching closely, it was a big day a couple of days ago in the organization, as Danny Holtzen made his season debut. It had been a long road back, and he took the mound for the Jackson Generals.
The 2-2. Swing and a miss. Fastball blown right by Juan Perez, and Danny Holtzen strikes out the first batter he faces in his return for Jackson.
How about that? Great sound there from Brandon Liebhaber, and we're going to talk to him right now, the voice of the Jackson Generals.
We get a chance to sit down with the voice of the Jackson Generals, Brandon Liebhaber, and this won't be the only time we visit with him this season, that's for sure. He's the manager of broadcasting and media relations at Jackson. His first year at Jackson. Brandon, thanks for taking the time. I know this will be the first of many visits. Appreciate you taking the time.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate you having me, Gary.
Well, before we dive into the team this year, let's talk about you a little bit. This is your first season at Jackson. How has things gone so far for you?
Things have gone well. It's been an interesting transition. I'm actually from Los Angeles, last year in the California League, so I got a chance to see a lot of these players when they were in the high desert last year. Obviously now Seattle is with Bakersfield in the California League, but this has been my first year as kind of the full-time lead broadcaster for a team, and I'm really enjoying it. Everyone in Jackson has been great, and everyone in the Seattle organization has been fantastic. We were really lucky to have, and I'm sure we'll talk about it, Danny Holtzen start for us this past week, and we've had a lot of executives. I even got the chance to talk to Jack Cerenzik, the general manager of the Mariners, and so I'm just really happy to be a part of the organization. Everyone's been real good to me, and I'm loving it. I mean, they let me call baseball every day, so there aren't too many complaints here on my end.
Oh, that's tough to beat. You mentioned it, Danny Holtzen. It was a big day for the organization. Danny Holtzen, a long road back to the mound. You got to see it firsthand. What was it like to watch him pitch once again?
It was pretty special. You could see how excited he was. He's a guy who, and I'm sure the people in the organization know, tends to try and be even keel, but it was tough for him at times to kind of contain that excitement. He was very happy to get back on the mound in a game situation under the lights in front of a crowd. Obviously, he'd just been in the league and even in spring training, but he said there was something different about this, and his father actually came into town to see him. The first minor league start for him in exactly 20 months. His last start was on September 1st, 2013 in Tacoma, and so then on May 1st, 2015, he finally gets back on the mound. And though he had expectations, because he's a competitor, everyone I was able to talk to in the organization just said they wanted to see him on the mound and stay healthy and just kind of make sure that he was able to do everything that he needed to do. It wasn't so much about the result. So it was cool to see. But that said, I mean, he pitched very well. Three innings and a third, probably could have gotten through four. There was a possible inning-ending double play in the fourth that our second baseman, Leody Bonilla, just had some trouble with and committed an error on. So it could have been four innings. He pitched, he threw 58 pitches by our count in the booth and looked pretty good. And the breaking ball was good. That's something that I know that he's been working on. So it was good to see him back out on the mound, and the stuff certainly seemed to be there. And that's good to see, especially considering what he's been through and everything that he had to work with and work through just to try and get back to this moment.
Yeah, you know, you make a great point, because so much of the emphasis was just him being on the mound and throwing. You know, the fact that some results came along with it and the stuff looked good, I mean, it's almost bonus considering how far he's had to come.
Absolutely, no doubt about that. I talked to him a little bit, you know, after the fact, and he's been working. He's always been trying to find what that breaking ball is for him. He has both a slider and a curveball to go along with, you know, the fastball we all know is there, and the changeups and scouts are already saying is a plus-plus pitch, and it just falls off the table to right-handed hitters. He told me that he's kind of working with a slurve now. He decided, instead of trying to focus on just a curveball or a slider, that he decided to just combine the two, and he rung up a couple of guys looking on that pitch. And I don't know if that was something that the hitters were looking for, but he was hitting his spots. The fastball on our gun at the park was high 80s, low 90s, so not quite as fast as what we saw in spring training when he was throwing in shorter spurts, but he was locating and really didn't run into too much trouble. He gave up an unearned run, and after the error that I mentioned earlier, there were some base runners, and there were some times where he had to work from the stretch and work through some adversity. But for the most part, I mean, he looked like he more than belonged back in Jackson, where obviously he started his pro career in 2012. So it was great to see him back on the mound and just locating all the pitches and getting guys out with ease. There wasn't really anything that he had too much difficulty with. So to see him go out there, throw 58 pitches over three innings and a third, and not have really any discernible issues on the baseball side of things, in addition to staying healthy and hopefully being able to make a few more starts at the minor league level this year, was great to see.
Did you get any sort of hint about the plan for him moving forward, like every 5 days, every what kind of pitch count he's looking at, anything moving forward?
They've been very Terry Clark, the team's minor league pitching coordinator, is in town, but everyone with the organization's played things very close to the vest. Mm-hmm. From what I can gather, we're not going to see him every 5 days. I think they want to keep it at least at first. They want to keep him on kind of a tight pitch count and just not risk anything. And we already know from spring training, Lloyd McClendon said that, you know, this year is mostly about getting him ready for 2016. So I wouldn't expect anything to happen too fast. I think that we're going to see some more starts from him in Jackson, but they haven't given me any concrete idea of what the plan is. So I wouldn't be surprised if you see a few more starts for him, but I also wouldn't expect it to be once every 5 days, at least in the beginning. I don't think he's going to be a regular part of the Jackson rotation as he gets back into things. At some point, I think that he'll be moved up to Tacoma just so he can get a lot of work done at the AAA level, because in 2012, he already kind of dominated the AA level, and the Mariners would probably like to have him close to home and at a higher level of baseball. But because we know that he can handle the AA level, they're going to start him off here, see how he does, and take things slowly. I wish I could give you a more concrete answer, but I do know that they don't plan on pushing him too far and too fast. So we'll kind of see where things go from here. Jackson travels to Chattanooga next. It would be fun to see him pitch against the Lookouts with all the prospects that the Twins have this season. I don't know if we will, but I just would say that they're taking it slow and kind of one start at a time. There isn't a timetable really too far in advance from what I can gather. The Mariners just want to see where he is, and especially after that first start, you want to see how the guy feels the next day. And so they're kind of taking things one start at a time right now and not pushing it too far with Danny.
Visiting with Brandon Liebhaber, the voice of the Jackson Generals. Follow him on Twitter at @B_LIEBHABER. Follow him closely for everything Jackson. So DJ Peterson in Jackson, and a lot of eyes in Seattle on DJ Peterson. I believe he had his first home run in Holtzman's debut. What have you seen? Yeah, what have you seen from Peterson so far?
Well, it was a slow start for DJ, no doubt about that. And a slow start really for the Jackson offense. We were expecting the team to really be fueled by the offense when you look at some of the prospects on the team, headlined, of course, by DJ Peterson. He started to come on of late. He's driven in 10 runs, all 10 of his RBIs, in fact, over his last 13 games after starting the season without an RBI in his first 8 games of the season. And he did indeed hit a home run his first of the year in back of Danny Holton's first start of the year. He also had a 2-RBI double in that game, drove in 4. So he's started to come around, playing first base for the most part this year while still getting some time at third. But I think that DJ is starting to find himself. It was a slow start for a lot of guys, as I mentioned, offensively. But over his last 10 games, he's hitting .321 with a home run, 7 RBIs, 7 runs scored as well. So I think he's starting to find his groove, as well as the whole Jackson offense. Team scored 15 runs yesterday, which was a season high. But DJ, I think, really had a coming out party in Danny's start. That was on Friday. When he had the double, the home run, 4 RBIs, and it was good to see him, because early in the season, I would say that he was certainly struggling, but the numbers can be misleading. He hit a lot of balls hard that were right at guys, and that was frustrating to him because he'd look at the stat sheet and see that his average was below 200. Now his balls are starting to find some holes, and we're starting to see the DJ Peterson that we all expected and hoped we'd see at the beginning of 2015.
Another guy that I'm pretty intrigued by, saw him in spring training, Gabby Guerrero. And the first thing when you see him, it's striking how close, just in terms of body, the way he moves around, he is to Vladimir Guerrero. What have you seen from Gabby so far this season?
Guerrero is indeed an intriguing prospect, and you're right. I think oftentimes when we compare someone to a family member, it can be kind of a lazy comparison in sports, but you're so right. You see a lot of Vlad in everything that Gabriel does. He doesn't wear batting gloves. He's a free swinger. He's got a big arm. He plays right field, though we've seen him some in center, and I'll get into that in a minute as well. Guerrero, certainly, I think the change in level has been a difficult adjustment for him. Jim Horner, who's in his second year with Jackson, tells me time and time again that the jump from high A to double A is probably the toughest in the minors. And not only that, but you have these players in Jackson going from High Desert last year. Of course, he's no longer in High Desert, but you know, Maverick Stadium there in Adelanto, California, is probably the most hitter-friendly, or at least most homer-friendly park in minor league baseball. And they've got to move up to the Southern League, which is a pitcher-friendly league, and the ballpark of Jackson has some pretty cavernous outfields, and that's one of the reasons why Jackson has been close to the bottom of the league in home runs to this point. But Guerrero, he does lead the team with 2 home runs, one actually an inside-the-park home run. He's a very exciting player. He is tied for second in the league in outfield assists with 3, so the big arm is there. The scouting report really hasn't changed with him, and he's told me he's seen a lot of sliders, and that's not a surprise. I mentioned that he's a free swinger like his uncle Vlad. He's had some difficulty laying off breaking pitches outside, and that's something that the coaching staff continues to work with him on, because when he makes contact, the raw power is there. The issue is that he strikes out a lot, and that's been his biggest problem this year. Just kind of glancing at his numbers right now, hitting .207, and he's got 22 strikeouts and 82 at-bats, but he does have 2 home runs and is tied for the team lead with 10 RBIs, and he also has those 3 outfield assists. So the tools are all there, and he's the youngest guy on this team. He's 21, and he was born in 1993, so he certainly has a lot of time to turn things around. And like I said, we've also seen him in center field. Jackson right now is without a natural center fielder on their roster. So Guerrero's actually seen a lot of time in center. In addition to right, he actually threw out 2 guys in the game, 1 at third and 1 at home in a game that he was playing center field. So it's good to see him just with that versatility. But the tools are all there, and I'm excited for what this season is going to be for him. This is a big step up for a guy his age, and it's a big opportunity for him at the double-A level. And oftentimes you see guys start out slow, as you know, we already talked about with DJ, and then take a step forward. Guerrero's a guy who I really enjoy watching. He's a fun player to watch. I mean, he's the reason that people watch baseball, and getting the opportunity to see him grow is something that I'm looking forward to this year. He's already, as I mentioned, had some success. There are some issues there as well, but I think that he's going to take a step forward because he is a smart guy. Everything that the coaches tell me and that scouts tell me is that he recognizes his issues. It's not a matter of him kind of overlooking some of the things he needs to work on. He knows what he needs to work on, and I think moving forward, that's a big trait that'll wind up helping him.
Are there any other guys that have stood out to you here early on in the season?
Yeah, there are a couple of guys. One guy I have to mention, Dario Pisano, who's always been a good hitter and a great on-base guy. is currently on a 15-game hitting streak. He's leading the league. He's hitting .420 this season, 29 hits and 69 at-bats. And he's hitting over .430 over these past 15 games. He's hit in every game. He's a left-handed hitter. He goes the other way. He draws a lot of walks, though he only has four this year, but he's only struck out six times in those 69 at-bats. He's a guy who I really like. He goes to all fields, and basically Jackson hasn't been able to keep him out of the lineup. He took yesterday off because they had a left-handed pitcher on the mound, but Pisano's a guy I really like, a 15th-round pick 2 years back out of Columbia, and he's really carried the offense. The offense struggled to just .220 in the month of April. Now they're starting to come around after some big games here in the beginning of May, but Pisano's a guy who has been really good. We were going to interview DJ after a game once, but he kind of insisted that we talk to Dario because that's how hot he's been. 15 games is tied to the longest hitting streak in the Southern League, and a guy on the mound that I like, who's very new to the organization, his name's Tony Zick. The Mariners actually acquired him from the Cubs for just cash considerations about a week before the season started. Zick had some experience in the Southern League with Chicago's affiliate, the Tennessee Smokies. He's a right-hander who throws 96-97, and this Jackson team doesn't have a ton of guys who throw hard on it. Zick's become the closer. He had one lackluster outing against his former team, the Tennessee Smokies. He gave up three runs on four hits on April 22nd, but since then he's thrown five perfect outings, basically. He's given up a couple of base runners, but no runs allowed. Six strikeouts, no walks in seven innings. He throws hard, and he's a guy who certainly profiles as a back-end guy in the bullpen. And Seattle is a team that, you know, fans know has focused a lot recently on power hitters. You see, especially on this Jackson roster, there are a lot of corner guys. We've already talked about DJ Peterson and Gabriel Guerrero. There's, you know, Jordy Lara, Dan Paolini, Dario Pisano. Those are all corner guys. So to have someone at the back end of the bullpen like Tony Zick has been a big help, and he's helped close out some of these recent wins for Jackson. The team's won six of their last eight games. So he's a guy that I've impressed with. So there's kind of a guy at the plate in Dario Pisano, and on the mound, Tony Zick, who might not jump out at you in terms of prospect rankings, but who really impressed early in the season for Jackson.
Well, great stuff, Brandon. This was a fun visit, first of many, and we'll hear your voice throughout the season. Hopefully we'll get a lot more Holtzman and Guerrero and also DJ Peterson highlights along the way. Thanks a lot for the time. We certainly appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me, Gary. I really appreciate it.
Brandon Liebhaber, the voice of the Jackson Generals. You can follow Jackson at Jackson Generals on Twitter and follow Brandon as well at B_LIEBHABER. Brandon Liebhaber. Thanks a lot, Brandon. We'll talk to you soon.
No problem. Talk soon, Gary.
And it's great to have you fans around the world listening on American Forces Radio, being able to sit in on a bit of baseball history here at the Kingdome in Seattle, Washington tonight. On May the 6th, 1982, Gaylord Perry, one out away from 300. The 2-1 pitch to Randolph. Swung on, ground ball to Cruz. This should do it. He's got it. It's over. Gaylord has 300. Everybody mobbing Gaylord Perry as he goes all the way. His teammates come out, Bud Bulling, and Gaylord Perry becomes the 15th man in baseball history to win 300 games as the Mariners beat the Yankees 7-3. My, oh my.
See you later.